Welcome to the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention Show. I'm your host, Eric L. Donovan, the Kingdom ROI Strategist. Families and businesses hire me to create, grow, and protect generational wealth by discovering that what they do in their family's living room matters more than what they do in their boardroom or advisor's conference room. On this show, I'm here to tell the stories of families and business owners who recognize that they didn't have a growth problem, they had a relationship and priority problem. We'll hear stories and the journey these families who recognize that business and financial growth weren't what mattered. They know that their relationships and priorities is what's going to determine their outcomes. So stick around to hear the hardships they've faced, the lessons they've learned, and the wisdom they wish they would have known along the way. Each story captures the blessings and the struggles of pursuing return on intention instead of return on investment. Sit back, relax, and enjoy the next 40 minutes where we take the world's broken mindsets and systems and turn them upside down. Hey everyone, welcome to the Return on Intention Show. I have brought you another incredible guest because you know that my passion is to advocate for families to grow and protect generational abundance for 100+ years. We do that by exposing widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that happens during your lifetime and unfortunately beyond that. So our guest today has lived a life with the understanding that to truly achieve abundance, it is not about the next business or financial strategy. It's about acknowledging that what we do in our living rooms matters a whole lot more than what we do in any conference or boardroom. So I am excited to dive into his story and talk more about his journey. So David Williams, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate being here.
Yeah, I know. We're going to have a good time. We're going to have a time.
That we are.
Hey, so for the sake of my audience, do me a little bit of a favor. Tell us a little bit about who you are. Tell us about you, your family, kind of what you do on a daily basis that has nothing to do with work.
Yeah, absolutely. If you want, I could go back to my backstory, how I got to the place that I am today, if you like.
I promise we will get there. Just give us a 30,000 foot overview, and then we're gonna dive into that super quick.
All right. So I am a husband, a father. I live in sunny Sarasota, Florida. You know, obviously I'm an entrepreneur as well, but I have a heart to impact. All of our companies are for purpose companies that we try to go out and impact the lives of other people and just have a really big heart to serve. You know, we even have a education program ourselves, the Fifth Degree Academy. I started with Tim Story, where we teach a lot of the things that they don't teach in school. That's pretty much in alignment with everything that you talk about. You know, faith, family, freedom, finances, and fitness, where we bring in influencers to influence and try to fill in the gaps of where the education system are missing the mark. And that's just really anytime I find my place, I'm in a place where I'm serving other people, I feel like I'm in that state of flow and just everything else happens.
So I usually ask this question when we kick off, what is your superpower?
I'd say one of my superpowers is, creative problem solving, innovation. That's okay. It. Probably one of mine.
So David, tell me a little, so you unpacked a whole lot when you started out there. Why don't you take us on that journey? Why don't you take us into the place of kind of how you ended up? And then I want to dig a little bit more into kind of the on-purpose companies in the academy you've got and everything else. But I think it'd be more important for my audience to know, like, how did you get here?
Yeah, so absolutely. I'll go back way back real quick when I was a kid. So as a kid, I grew up with a lot of labels that I faced. I was told that I had a learning disability and I wasn't going to amount to anything unless I did a trade or did something with my hands. And it's not knocking that, but that's just what I was told with some of the challenges that I faced. And, you know, all the way back to a young kid, things just didn't come easy for me. You know, the things that I loved the most that I felt that other people didn't love as much as me, I had to put in, you know, maybe 10x the effort to get a fraction of the result. But I had a dad, still have a dad, you know, he was one of my very first mentors. And, you know, he taught me what grit looks like and hard work. And I saw him just work around the clock for our family to provide. And we had a brother that went down the wrong path. My dad really took that to heart. And he operated two businesses and worked around the clock to afford the things he couldn't afford to keep me and my sister busy. So, you know, we didn't have the opportunity to go down that same path. And I started to take note of that. And then I started to realize where all my shortfallings were academically, my shortfallings in the game of baseball that I love so much, but I didn't have a lot of God-given talent in. that if I just showed up differently than every other kid that was in the room and just outworked everybody, that became actually that's my second superpower, is just outworking everybody in the room. And I quickly realized that I could close the gap and the lack of God-given talent that I had and other people had. And that led me to playing college baseball. You know, I had a dream to play pro ball growing up, ended up my first year of college hurting my arm. So I kind of had to go out into the workforce. And my initial thought was to live in one of those labels, and went and did a job in tool and die, got my certification in tool and die, went to start there. And I just didn't have a lot of heart and passion for it. So I reached out to a friend for help. And what I thought was going to be a part-time job turned into a career. I had a friend that worked at Circuit City, and he brought me in there. And here I was coming out of baseball. It's my first career. And I thought I was starting over. But again, little did I know, I was kind of building upon the foundation that I already had built and just did what came natural to me. I got into that first job, started outworking everybody in the store, became the number one sales professional in the store, then number one in the entire company out of about 10,000 Circuit Cities. That fast-tracked me to becoming one of the youngest store managers in history at Circuit City. I think I was about 21 years old. They gave me the keys to a $24 million superstore, and I had to learn quickly. And I, you know, I was climbing the corporate ladder, feeling like my career was just really taking off, and ended up on an innovation.
Wait, hold on. I'm going to interrupt you for a minute. 21 years old, they handed you the keys to a circuit to manage a whole Circuit City.
Yeah. So I had a mentor that took me under his wings and just saw the work ethic I had, the leadership that I had. And, you know, I was in the store as a salesperson creating like my own price tags where I was taking, they had us selling warranties and accessories and everything else. I'm like, you know what? This would be so much easier if we just bundled it together in my own price tag. So here I was, the sales associate, creating my own price tags and then using it to sell. And I was getting record sales results. And then, you know, I luckily came across another mentor of mine that was Oz Engen, his name was at the time. And he saw something in me and took a shot and gave me the keys to a
superstore. It's super easy to look back at that and go, man, here's where you succeeded. But the only challenge with that is that everybody then misses the lessons you learn. Take me back to kind of that experience, 21 years old, managing the Circuit City, really kind of flying high. But what is one of the biggest mistakes you made, but you still carry with you today, the lesson that you learned from it?
I'd say the lesson that I learned there, which I was just going to get into next, was okay. I didn't prioritize my health. You know, I came in there and I was chasing a career. I was chasing, you know, that dream to get to the next level. And nobody taught me to look after my health. And I was working 16-hour days. I wasn't managing stress. I wasn't eating the right way. And, you know, what ended up happening one day, I'm on this fast track. And then all of a sudden I woke up and life happened. And I started having severe pain throughout my whole body that I didn't know what was going on. It progressively got worse and worse. I kept pushing through it. And until one day I woke up and I couldn't walk. My ankles were swollen up. My toes were swollen up. It felt like my body just had kerosene running through it and it was on fire. And I didn't know what was going on. And it was just a scary time in my life, to the point where I was walking in, still going to work with crutches. And then my district manager came to me and said, Dave, you got to figure out what's going on. Don't worry, we'll hold your job, but you need to go out on disability and get yourself out. And that's where I went off on disability. Started going to doctor after doctor, and they actually diagnosed me with a pretty debilitating condition. It's called ankylosing spondylitis. It's an autoimmune condition where your body attacks its own joints and causes significant spine degeneration. And my doctors told me at the time, here I was at the face of another label. And they said, Dave, just I want to be frank with you. Most people that have your condition end up on long-term disability for life. And it's a very painful, it's a very debilitating condition. There's no cure for it. We can just put you on medications, but eventually your body's going to stop responding to it. We're going to have to try a different one and we'll do our best. And we have better treatment than we did in the past, but this is the reality that you had to face. And I think that was really when I came to this tipping point into my life. It was, I guess, a fork in the road between faith and fear. And yep. I was at this place, and I think the last thing I wanted to be, I knew deep down in my heart, God didn't create me on this planet to be a guy laying home on his couch, being on long-term disability. I looked up on my wife and sorry if I get emotional, but at the time I knew she deserved better than that. And then I had this deep desire inside to be my hero's hero. And you might ask, well, who's my hero? That's my dad.
Yeah.
I watched him work around the clock his entire life to sacrifice for his family. And that was his superpower and the only way he knew how to provide, because he lost one son and he just did everything in his power to make sure that I had the best opportunity. My sister had the best opportunity. But when I watched him, he didn't ever buy anything for himself. He never took vacations. He never saved for retirement. So as I watched this, I knew deep down there was going to be a day where he had to retire and he didn't have the means to do so. So I needed to be the guy that changed the financial trajectory of my family tree. And I knew I wasn't going to do that on long-term disability. So I prayed on it. And then 6 month mark came and there was that tipping point. They said, David, if you know, we can only hold your job for 6 months. And that was it. So I wasn't ready health-wise, but I forced myself, took a leap of faith, went back to work anyways, fought through the challenges. Now I was in a tough financial position because I wasn't working 6 months, got behind on my mortgage. I was borrowing money from family to get by while I was trying to get well, and started to get a little bit of momentum back maybe 90 days in. And then all of a sudden life happened again. And this time there was a customer walked in the Circuit City and they're like, Dave, I'm so sorry to hear. And I'm like, well, what are you sorry to hear about? And they're like, well, didn't you see on the news, they're actually going to be shutting down every Circuit City store and they're laying off 25,000 people. So now my world at the time I thought was just absolutely rocked. And I'm like, why is this happening to me at the time? And I'm having these health issues, not doing well financially. And now I'm going to be unemployed in 90 days. So this like fear sank in. Am I going to be that guy on long-term disability? I know I can't.
Can I stop you real quick there and just ask you a question? What in that exact moment, where is God for you? Are you frustrated and angry at him? Are you trusting? I mean,
at first I was asking God, why are you doing this to me? But later on, I realized he was doing it for me. And, you know, and I think that's a lot of times in life where we'll look at challenges and we'll look at adversity. Why is this happening to me? But if we want anything great in this world, it doesn't come without challenges and adversity. It's like going into the gym and you want to get a six pack and you got to show up every day and put in the work and go through the pain to get there. And I think God puts these trials in our way intentionally. And it was a little bit later on that I realized that. And I start to look at things differently when adversity comes my way. Now it's like, I know there's something great on the other side of that, that God is preparing me for. But in the moment, to your point, and I was like, why are you doing this to me? But then, you know, later on I had a shift and realized that he was doing it for me.
So where do things begin to break out from a health standpoint and everything?
So I started to pray on it and, really leaned into my faith and, all of a sudden.
I'm going to pause you right there only because I want to tell me more specifically, what does that look like? And the reason I'm asking is for that person who's stuck right now, maybe that person who's debilitated right now, that person who's just had a tough job situation, who's asking the same question that you were asking, like, God, why are you doing this to me? What did your prayers look like at that moment as you're kind of getting into breakthrough? Because I'm sure there are people listening who are in that moment, and that's why I want you to share that.
Yeah, and I think, you know, sometimes there's the fear of the situation itself can paralyze us. But I think in my case there, the fear of living an almost life, a fear of being on disability was far greater than the situation it had. So, you know, I looked to God, I prayed to God, and I was looking for answers. And, you know, I believe to this day that, you know, a lot of times people will think when they pray to God that, hey, poof, miracles happen, which that does happen. But I do believe more times than not that miracles come in the form of opportunities. And it's our job to pay attention. And most times our prayers are going to be answered in the form of opportunities. In this case, that's what happened with me. So one day, it was about a couple of weeks later, I met a friend of the family. He was in the insurance business, young kid, much younger than me at the time, was doing really well. And it was my first encounter with passive income, reoccurring revenue. I'm like, sign me up. Yeah, I'm going to let me be an insurance agent. And, but you know, I'm broke and I don't have money to start a business. So I got to figure that part out too. So I prayed on it some more, ended up going to a company, Allstate Insurance, gave them a business plan. They loved it, started getting my license at night, but I didn't have the money and I had some debt, which would have prevented me from opening a business. But I kept moving forward. I kept getting my license at night while I was closing down Circuit City, prayed on it some more. And then all of a sudden I walked in one day, and I kid you not, 100 feet away, there was an insurance brokerage. It was also going out of business in the same shopping mall that was across from a DMV. And I knew it wasn't because it was a bad location or a bad business model, because after all, everybody needs insurance, and it's across from a DMV where people go to register their car that have to have insurance to register their car. But I remember walking by every time I was in there, and it was a lady just sitting on her phone, just her head down on her phone. And I knew if I could get that location, I could hustle and just do what I normally did at Circuit City here and figure out the insurance business. But I just got to figure out the money part. So I prayed on it some more. And then it was probably maybe another month later into the liquidation where the liquidators finally came to me and they said, Dave, all the open merchandise, display models, the customer returns, all the inventory that's loose in the back, we just got to clear all that out. Whatever you can get, pennies on the dollar, don't care. We got to get rid of that. And it was almost in that moment, it wasn't even my own voice. I just said, hey, what if I made it easy on you? And I just bought up all that inventory. And I would also be interested in buying that inventory from other Circuit City stores within a 4-hour radius. Wow. And they're like, well, what would you be willing to pay? And I looked, I didn't have any really money at the time, but I had a 401k. And after penalties, I'm like, I'll give you everything in my 401k. I had about $7,000. I bought up 70 to 80,000 worth of merchandise. I forgot. I was so excited in the moment. Forgot to tell my wife about it. So I started bringing truckloads of like used electronics home, and she worked in retail at the time. So she didn't come home till later. That gave me the opportunity to stack our living room to the ceiling where we didn't have a living room anymore. And she just walked in and was like, what's going on? And where's my living room? And I'm like, well, trust me, I haven't led you astray yet. And she gave me grace like she normally does. And she's like, oh, as long as I get my living room back and you just make happen what you always make happen and figure it out. And I actually ended up buying fixtures from Circuit City and created like a little mini Circuit City in my basement, cataloged it all. While I was getting my insurance license at night, while I was unwinding Circuit City, I was staying up late and cataloging everything, researching it on eBay, taking photos of it, and then listing it. Ended up selling all that merchandise, raising enough money to pay off all my debt, cover my bills in the meantime, and then raise just enough, which at the time, the minimum capital was only $25,000, but I raised enough, which was the minimum requirement to start a complete scratch agency. I couldn't buy an insurance agency like a lot of people do, but I could start from scratch. So I did that, and that was about 2 months operating capital just to survive. So I came in, even when I went down to training, I was sleeping on floors. I was doing everything that I could to save a dollar. And then when I got in my first day, I ended up opening up in that very same shopping mall that I prayed on. That location became my location in that mall right next to the Circuit City. And then a trainer even came in and be like, Dave, first 2 weeks, we're going to teach you the ropes of insurance. Then you can sell. And I'm like, that's not in the cards for me. I have literally, you know, 8 weeks of operating capital, and I just need to know what I do best. I'm going to sell, and then you're going to teach me. So I started pulling people out of the line at the DMV. I remember my first customer to this day, Geraldo Hernandez, big motorcycle guy, had all these properties and stuff. It should have taken me 30 minutes to write his insurance. It took me 4.5 hours. I'm in this like DOS-based system in this insurance trying to figure out. I'm like, I know how to sell, but I don't know anything about insurance. And I'm like, trainer, get over here. Teach me while I'm selling. But little did I know, because we were also required to, we couldn't open up unless we hired 2 employees too. So I took 2 people under my wings from Circuit City. You know, so I had this mall rent. I had 2 employees I'm responsible for, minimal money in the bank. And I just acted as if, you know, somebody was trying to take it away from me 24/7. And I didn't realize it at the time, but it was the best way that I could be a leader. And it was the best way that I could show up and train my people. They did just saw me coming in like my life was on the line, which it was. I knew if I didn't succeed, failure meant me being the guy on the couch. And one thing I forgot to mention before that, I wrote out a check for $1 million. And I didn't have that in my account. I still got the check up in my thing with my unemployment card. But it wasn't about the money, what that check meant. What that check meant is if I could cash it, it could leverage as a tool that I could provide my wife the life she deserved. Mm. I could be my hero's hero. Take care of him, take care of my parents during retirement, like the way they couldn't take care of myself. I could provide a life on my own terms because I knew I couldn't be on my feet in retail. It was just too painful with my condition. Yeah. And I could do what I love to do. Cause even before starting my own business, I was, you know, serving on the Boys and Girls Club and doing impact philanthropy work through Circuit City. And I wanted to be able to do that sort of thing and have the freedom to do it. And I knew that's what I meant. And I looked at that check every single day and obsessed about it. And I put in 16-hour days pushing through the health challenges. And I noticed my team members started to kind of rise up. They weren't on level with me, but they got to about 60-70% where I was. And first couple months in, we were one of the top in the region. We became one of the top in the company. We kept going. They let me open up more locations. We ended up scaling that to a $22 million reoccurring revenue business from nothing. And ended up cashing that check. My goal was I had written down 35. I did it by 34 and a half and became my hero's hero.
Yeah.
Still take care of all their bills to this day.
Wow.
Bought them their first new Cadillac. And then here in Florida, when we moved, proudest moment of my life, handed my dad the keys to a brand new retirement home.
Really?
That I was able to do. So we exited that first company. That was my first business exit. And we ended up using that capital. And then I was in the moment, it almost gave me some flashbacks like, hey, I'm starting over again. Yeah, I got some capital, but was I a one trick pony? Did I do it again? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do next? You know, those things start to rewind through our mind. And it's like those, that fear starts to creep back in and question. But I went in and actually came across the partner. He was also faith-based. We had similar values. And it's rare that, you know, you find the right business partner. But he was getting out too, selling his business at the same time. So we got back into the insurance space, built a bigger insurance agency on the independent side and a fraction of the time. We ended up starting a recruiting company together for insurance agents and ended up being one of the top recruiting companies in the insurance space. Mm-hmm. And in those companies, we built in, you know, for purpose components. So in our insurance company, we give away scholarships in my brother's name that passed away to at-risk youth and kids at the Boys and Girls Club. In our recruiting company, we, you know, try to give back resources to our community to either at-risk youth or veterans to help them show up better in the job place. Those that are struggling maybe with employment and don't know how to show up in an interview. And we'll also bake in part of our proceeds. Like just this last month in our recruiting company, we would do a portion of the proceeds, around 10%, would go to funding toy drive for inner city families that couldn't afford to have Christmas. And then this month we're actually doing a homeless initiative. Same thing, giving back part of our proceeds to help the homeless. So we started that company. We ended up starting a couple software companies and got into some real estate. And same thing with those. We really try to make that a part of what fuels the impact. And, you know, as I went, I started to pick up on patterns. I started to realize that there was, you know, success leaves clues. And yeah, anytime I went to the next level in my life, of course, God was first and foremost in front of that. But it wasn't a what, it wasn't a where, it wasn't a when. It was always a who moment involved. You know, I look back, my dad was my first mentor, then my baseball coach. And then the reason I did well at Circuit City, I got the opportunity from my district manager. And then even when I started my insurance business, while I did it from the ground up, I went out and started to look for other people that already did and went to the places that I was trying to go to learn from them. And then what could I do to maybe put a different spin on it with my ingenuity and that superpower of creativity to do things a little bit different. And then I started investing in mentorship, started going to masterminds, started going to business conferences. And that's what led to some of these other ventures and getting into real estate and learning from other successful people that were just like me in other industries. And then I started going with Tim Story, became one of my mentors that I hired. And Dave Meltzer is another mentor of mine, Cole Hatter. And started working with them. I was working with Tim for a number of years. And I was looking back and reflecting on just my journey, how I got here. And I was like, I didn't learn any of this in school. And Tim's like, no, neither did I. Right. And I'm like, well, why is that? And I'm like, well, I mean, it's kind of obvious that it's by design. And, there's a lot of things missing in the education system that I think feed into the statistics in this world. You know, you look at, yeah, I think it's like 78% of Americans that are, 25 and under have subprime credit scores and they're living paycheck to paycheck. We don't teach them to have a relationship about money. You look at, you know, 33% of our kids in school are being medicated. You look at all these different statistics, and then we're teaching them about X, Y, Z, but we're not teaching them about the things that teach them to thrive. We took faith out of school, took core values out of school, and we're not teaching them to have a relationship about money. As a matter of fact, we're teaching money myths. We're teaching kids, hey, money's the root of all evil. Well, no, the Bible says the love of money, the worship of money is the root of all evil. But there's a lot of bad people out there that have a lot of money. And I think the good guys need to have some too, so we can go out and do good work. Right.
Yeah.
And we need to be teaching these type of things. And I was talking this with Tim. And I'm like, I learned so much in masterminds, just 1 year of masterminding. And I learned way more than I did in school. Imagine if they had that when we were younger, where would we be? We'd be on the moon somewhere. Mm-hmm. I'm like, we should start something like that. And that's where the idea for the Fifth Degree Academy was born. We would bring it in business experts, authors, influencers to try to excite kids around education. The goal is, as we grow it, start bringing in athletes, because a lot of times you're a young kid, you're not excited about education, but maybe if Tim Tebow comes in and tells you a thing or two about a thing or two, you come in to talk to Tim Tebow, he tells you about God, and then he tells you about how he did what he did, and you learn something in the process. So that became the concept. And we're like, how are we going to launch this? Like, let's do a 2-day event. And then something told me, on the other side of this wall, there's a big neon sign that says, if you build it, because that's been something I feel like God has spoken to me. If you ever watched the movie, The Field of Dreams, through that movie, so many times when I've thought about something or had a God idea, I would hear the whisper, if you build it, they will come. And to me, that was always God talking to me that I'm onto something. And behind me is actually the phrase, go the distance. Cause sometimes you could go after something, but you might be 1 degree away and you got to go a little bit farther. So that's to remind me to go the distance when things don't happen overnight. But I heard that voice.
David, this has been so fascinating. This has been so fascinating. Unfortunately, I'm limited on time. We got about 5 more minutes. We could probably spend a whole podcast on the Academy. If people want more information on that or dig into that more, where can they do that?
They can just go to fifthdegree.com. So 5thdegree.com. And only last thing I was saying there, how we launched it, we actually broke a Guinness World Record for the most amount of parents and kids to learn about financial literacy in a 4-hour window. We got some of the greatest speakers, Eric Thomas, Tim Story, Dave Meltzer, all these people, because we built the brand and we built the table. And God told me, if I built the table with the right purpose and the right cause, the right people are going to show up. Because I was thinking, how am I going to attract all these speakers that I want to get? They normally charge $50,000, $100,000. So we built the table and we went out to them, told them what we're trying to do. We're going to break a world record and we're going to try to impact some lives. Not one of them charged a dime. We had about $1 million worth of speakers that God sent our way. It was a phenomenal event. And then we broke that world record, and then that launched our Academy, where now that's been the big passion project for us. We've been trying to go all in on that and just try to touch as many lives and families as possible.
So do people come to a live event? It's online?
So we did a live event, and now the mastermind it launched. So we do bi-weekly calls on Tuesday nights, and then we'll bring in experts, influencers, authors that come in and teach on topics. And then we reinforce family values. So it's for the whole family. Parents, kids come in. And, you know, Tim Story might come in and talk about the miracle mentality. And then at the end of that, we give him an exercise and an activity to do. So there's learning between those 2 weeks. So some of the activities, we have families do vision boards together. You know, another thing we've done is had families think about what their core values were in the household, what could be different in the family, write them out, print them out on a canvas so that, hey, maybe it's not just mom and dad holding the kids accountable to their family values, but all of a sudden mom and dad are having a rough day. And little Johnny or little Jane needs to check mom and dad and say, hey, mom and dad, you're not living into the value system that we created. And that helps strengthen the family unit. So different things like that, that just solidify and bring together family unity and help them, you know, fill in the gaps where the education system's falling short.
No, that's beautiful. I hope that people get engaged. We could probably spend a whole podcast just talking about
that. Yeah, absolutely. Let's come back for like series 2. So we'll do it.
Yeah, we may have to. Hey, let me ask you my question. I love to hear just from every, I ask every single guest, in 100 years, what do you hope your family remembers about you? I mean, you were your hero's hero. That was your goal. But I mean, now you're looking down generations. What are you hoping they're remembering about you?
So I would say in 100 years from now, my goal is when I leave this earth, that I leave a legacy and I leave an impact that it's lasting after me. And another mentor told me this, and I firmly believe it. And this is what I try to live into, Ed Milet. And he said, you know, one day, you know, we're all going to turn to dust and we're going to meet our maker. And I believe he's going to show us two things. He's going to show us who we were in this world and who we could have been, our absolute maximum potential. And when that happens, it's my goal and my desire that he shows me a near identical twin. I don't want to leave anything on the table. I want to create something that's lasting and impacting far after I'm gone. Something my family is proud of, and my kid, my son, my grandkids, and my grandkids' kids can talk about.
So, David, if people want to get in touch with you, is the Fifth Degree Academy, is that the best place to find you and to kind of follow the things that you're doing right now?
Yeah, Fifth Degree Academy, or you go on Instagram. It's at DW2426 or at David Williams Verified. Also got a website, bookdavidwilliams.com.
Awesome. David, thank you so much for being here. It's been a joy.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure to be on. I appreciate you having me.
All right. Everyone, thank you so much for being here for the show. It's, as always, it's just exciting to get to visit and hear these kingdom stories. You know that I run an invitation-only program that helps families grow and protect generational abundance for 100+ years. And we do that by exposing widespread planning illusions and minimizing the destruction of wealth that happens in your lifetime and beyond. So I've got several tips and examples that can help you grow your wealth. And we do that by helping you discover that you don't need another business or financial strategy. What you need to do is acknowledge that what you do in your living room is the things that matter more than what you do in any conference or boardroom. So please connect with me at kingdomroi.org for more information. As always, it's been a pleasure being with you. God bless you. Have a fantastic day.
Thank you so much for joining me for the Kingdom ROI Return on Intention podcast. If you're a business owner or a family who recognizes that what you're doing in your family's living room matters more than what you do in the boardroom or advisors' conference rooms, you're open to sharing the ups and downs of the journey and would like to be a guest on the show, then I'd like to invite you to apply by visiting our website, www.kingdomroi.org. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show, and they mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, www.kingdomroi.org, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. This is Eric L. Dunovet, the Kingdom ROI Strategist, signing off. Until next time.